Good morning. My name is Henry Robinson from VMware. Hope you enjoyed last night. Hopefully most of your brain cells came back. What was that, VMteenie?
Yeah, the VMworldteenie. That was VMworldteenie. An experience.
This is Robert Bosch from R&D at VMware. Been three long days. First of all, thanks a lot for coming to this session. I know it's been a long conference for all of you, and it's good to come in on a Thursday. Just a couple of things to kind of normalize the audience and so forth. How many of you today are using the SDK? Pretty good. Version 2 or version 1? So version 1? Version 2? Okay. How many of you use VMPerl? Or any? How many of you use command line? Okay. Okay, so what we really want to do is make it as interactive as possible. What we're going to do is talk a little bit about the overview of the SDK, new developments that are happening with regards to the Perl toolkit. We all know that Perl is now crack, which means I guess you're going to have to declare it anytime you go through the airport now. But I think the point is what we really want to do is give you an overview. We'll give you some in-depth about how you do performance monitoring through the SDK, as well as we'll spend some time on VIPerl. And we'll do it as interactive as possible. So in fact, because it's the last day, instead of asking for questions at the end, if you want to stop us and say, hey, please clarify that, and you think it makes sense to do it within context, go right ahead. And of course, we'll have plenty of time at the end to go through questions. Okay, so the agenda is we'll talk about web services. Why do we adopt the SDK model as a web service? Two is talk about typical uses for VMware integration. In fact, we'll talk about an end user case study of an end user who's actually using the SDK for self-provisioning. We'll talk about the data model for VI, just a broad brush of what the data model represents. Talk about performance management and then wrap it up. Okay? So if we start taking a look at web services, where does the API fit in? The API fits on top of Virtual Center. Virtual Center as the platform of aggregating information from multiple ESX servers. Of course, we provide a graphical user interface. Our VMware solution is a graphical user interface, the VI client. But also, Virtual Center provides a platform of integration and gives you one of the solutions by which you can be able to use the SDK in order to get some information. If we go a little bit further deeper, so what we have is a web service. A web service that implements the SOAP protocol. And so on the left-hand side, your left-hand side, you have an ESX server or a virtual center. Both of them have a web service. It is a connection point. And then you can have either the VI client, which is the VMware tool, or your own client application that essentially uses a network interface to talk to the individual environments. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the web service. The first thing is it's always on. It's always available. You don't have to install any software at all in order to enable it. So much as you would in the past take a look at SNMP as an interface, the web service is available either from the ESX server or Virtual Center. No special software to load. Very straightforward to use. In other words, it uses an HTTP or an HTTPS interface. Standard is HTTPS to ensure that we have security. Okay? And to that end, it's a secure interface. Since you are doing both monitoring, but also you have the ability of being able to do active management, it is important that we ensure that nobody who has access to HTTP can simply have access to the box and either for information discovery as well as management and control. So we provide a secure interface through HTTPS. Fine-grained access control. Just like the VI client, you have the ability of being able to delegate only certain functions to API users. So, for example, you can say you're only allowed to view. You're only allowed to view virtual machines. You're only allowed to do power-on operations. You're not allowed to configure. So you can define the same interface that you have for the VI client, which defines the users and user access rights, of course, automatically correspond as well to using the SDK. So it allows you to do management, user management from the VI client, and all of those rights, access rights, now come across to the API.
And I'll say this is one of the bigger changes for those of you who are familiar with the first version of the SDK. In previous versions, we had a fairly coarse-grained access control model, and that's something we got a lot of feedback on. And so in the newer version, we provide much finer-grained access control, and we're still getting feedback on other things we can do, and we're always happy to hear that, hear feedback on what people are looking for in that area.
It's designed for network access in the sense that we're latency tolerant. You'll find that a lot of the installations, the client is not necessarily geographically in the same geography as actually the server. So what we provide is the ability to be able to send a command, enough time upon which the command, the response will be returned, and you can fine-tune the amount of data that comes back in the response to take care of low latency links. It's firewall friendly. The problem in many cases with network-based protocol is that when you're trying to install it within your environment, you have the problem, which is, how do you have to punch through firewalls? You have to go talk to your network guys. Sometimes they don't like to talk back to you. No disparaging remarks on network guys. But the point about it is, all we're simply using a standard web-based port, the HTTP ports, port 80 and port 443, if I remember, and that's all you're using, which means it's very easy for you to deploy your application over it through your firewall. The second part, of course, is we have a request response model, so there are no responses coming back for the server that you weren't asking for. So the intent there is very easy to punch through firewalls. It's comprehensive. Everything that you can do with the VI client and more is available through the API. So you can do all of inventory. You can do virtual machine lifecycle, power operations, create, delete, migrate, all of those. Host network and storage configuration, so you can configure the ESX box. You can get all the performance information, user management, and event management. So it's a very, very broad interface that allows you to have all of the capabilities that you'd have, not only what would be available through the VI client, but considerably more. And finally, it's standards-based. We follow the web services-based profile, which is essentially the SOAP-based profile, and the benefit of that is there are a lot of broad availability of tools that you can take advantage of that are made for SOAP-based protocols. Okay? We use it too. We use it not only for our VI client. It works across the ESX server. It works across Virtual Center. You'll find it's exactly the same interface. So, in fact, if you target it for ESX server or target it for Virtual Center, there's not a lot of changes that you need to make. You need to be aware, of course, that if you're targeting it for Virtual Center, you'll have multiple hosts. You may have multiple data stores and so forth. That's the only difference. But as far as the same, you'll use exactly the same syntax of commands across that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add to that, like I said, it really is complete. You use the term eating our own dog food. The VI client web access are completely implemented on top of these APIs. And so in some sense, you can really just view the VI client as the ultimate VI SDK reference app.
And we are adding plans in 2007, actually, VMware Server. So we'll also be providing the ability of using that same interface to be able to access the VMware Server infrastructure as well. So the benefit to you is you're writing your application once, targeting it to whatever platforms you're dealing with. Currently not planned. Okay. But good data point. Yeah. The question was, will we be adding workstations? So now we'll talk about typical uses for VMware integration. Of course, use it for VMware products. Professional services, we're finding out professional services people are beginning to use the SDK in order to take care of specific engagements with customers. A good way of a good integration piece to be able to provide value from that side. We have partner integrations. If you've been to Solutions Exchange, there are several partners that are actually demonstrating applications based on The API, both 1x and also 2x, now more and more actually providing 2x. The types of integrations that people are doing are standard, what you'd expect from standard partners. Systems management, taking all of the information that's available or a portion of the information that's available from ESX server or virtual center and providing it to higher level management platforms. So whether it's Tivoli, BMC, CA, HP OpenView, and other products, it gives you the ability of being able to bring the VMware infrastructure directly into those tools. The second part is provisioning, so that you can provide an application that will provision ESX servers, provision virtual machines, and so forth, is another example where you're using active management. Application resource management. Now, instead of talking about it as a virtual machine, you're talking about being able to look at individual applications, configure virtual machines that are very much aimed at specific applications. And finally as well, quite a bit of VCB platforms also use the API in order to get the essential information of being able to stage consolidated backup. All of that is using the web service and virtual center ESX server underneath. We're also seeing a lot of end-user applications. As an example of people here in the audience, the SDK maybe originally was conceived as the partner integration model, but in many ways what we're realizing is that we're actually having an order of magnitude more people or end-users who are using it. And the reason being is that, yes, you'd like to buy a shrink-wrapped application that performs the higher-level management functions. But when we start talking to end users, there are a lot of cases where because of you want to integrate your business processes with virtualization, and it's very hard to buy a package that encapsulates what you're doing in your business. The benefit is by using virtualization, it's very easy to begin to integrate the virtual machine infrastructure into what you're doing. So we'll give you some examples right now.
And I just want to throw a forward pass to later in the talk. A lot of times something like web services level integration isn't the best solution for end users, and we understand that, and we'll be talking later about some present and future work to help bridge that gap and provide easier solutions for doing end user integrations.
So here's an example. What you really want to do is create a user web portal. It's not clear that you want to give the VI client to every single one of your users, but it's important for them to be able to understand the status of individual virtual machines in maybe a lingo that they understand, the mail service, the database service, whatever there is. So what you'd have is a user web portal. This one here is very simple, very straightforward, that says, here's a list of virtual machines, and here's the traffic light status of what their current status is, right, red, yellow, green. So in this situation here, the partner simply uses the web service to extract the information about the virtual machine state from the web service, will display it in his web page. Any point in time where there are changes, where an individual may do a start and stop operation, then they'll actually turn around and reflect that within the web page. But here's an example of an easy integration that delivers a lot of services to the users, and you'll find most probably in your own IT information infrastructure that this is a significant part of what you're trying to do, which is to communicate to your users the general status of the box. It prevents a lot of phone calls that, oh, by the way, is my application up today? The second part is, now you turn around and we're trying to show on the right-hand side, and art class was not my favorite subject, but what we're trying to do here is to show power operations. So now what you've done is you've enabled the user to be able to start and stop individual virtual machines. So in that situation there, you've enhanced the web page so that you provided power operations directly on that web page. Allows, in this case here, a different class of end user. They may most probably need to have privileges and rights and so forth, but what you're doing there is the ability for them to be able to reboot their individual virtual machine, suspend it, whatever operations that you want to provide to your end user base. The important thing is, because you're using the common web service, then that means that any changes that you're doing through virtual center, through VI client and so forth, is all coordinated. You don't have to worry about having different data coming back from VI client as you would have through this web page, because all of it is coming through a central data source. Okay? Here's an end user case study, and this is something that has actually been integrated, and we've seen, this is an example, but I think we've seen several other end users who've used the SDK to do some integrations. This is a global pharmaceutical firm. Their problem was they wanted to improve service times to deploy computing services to clients. The problem that they had is in the past, the clients, this is a global firm, and the clients would turn around and now and then ask IT to provision machines, systems, but there were a lot of times that, you know, because you were in a foreign country, you decided to buy your own, put your own piece of infrastructure in place, and then notify IT and say, oh, by the way, I've just bought this system. Don't you mind backing it up, maintaining it, and everything else? This has never occurred to any of you here, I'm sure. So in this situation here, what they really wanted to do is come out with an orchestrated model, integrate in virtual machines as their infrastructure so that at any point in time when a local resource needed to have new compute services, all they needed to do is simply turn around and add new virtual machines. So it was very important for them to reduce their capital expenses by making sure that they made use of all their hardware resources. The other part is they surely didn't want to have a situation where they had to have an IT staff that was always there ready to reboot a machine whenever it had a problem, or in fact have to provision services whenever that country site needed to have new provisions. So they really wanted to start moving the enablement through self-service. So they were building a user web portal. The user web portal essentially has four pages, of which three of the pages are for the user to fill in information about their business. What application are they trying to run? What services they need to have? And all of that had nothing to do with virtual machines. It had to do with standard processes that we needed to do to enable. The last one was virtual machines, and in fact, when it was first initiated, it was like they didn't even never use the word. They never used the V word. They simply said, you need a system. You have two choices. You can either use this virtual machine, and I can't remember what they called it, but they didn't want to call it a virtual machine. You can either use this system and get provisioning that's done within 2 hours, or you can insist on having a physical machine, and your provisioning will take 6 weeks. So they simply allowed the user to pick what was most important, right? If you want to see it, touch it, rub it, then it took you 6 weeks. If you simply wanted to use it, then it took considerably less time. So that's what they provided, which is a user web portal. So in fact, what they've done is they essentially have three centers worldwide. It's one group that's actually managing three centers worldwide. They send out this web service to individual environments. They have over 100 hosts today, 2,100 virtual machines. The physical machines are actually located in different countries. So, for example, in Europe, their web portal is actually in France and is actually controlling machines in Germany and so forth, allows the user to simply provision the system wherever they want to, whenever they need to, doesn't have to call the IT staff in order to do it. So what they've resulted, the result is faster provisioning times, lower management costs, improved conformance to IT standards, right? Everything kind of fits into the standard model that they need to have. They didn't have to worry about having these machines that had different backup policies, different power policies, different usernames and everything else. It conformed to the standards that the corporation had. Better uses of system resources. It allowed, for example, the French to share systems with the Germans. Don't happen to no good. But that was an example, right? I'll get myself into a whole lot of problems very quickly, but it's the last day of the show. Anyway, and also lower cost. In the end, you take a look at it and you deal with it with lower cost. Yes. So good question. So the question was, how much effort did they have to spend? And in fact, they said, look, we had two people, 3 weeks, and in fact, it was a team, and they sat back and said, if I have to redo it again, one person would have taken 2 weeks. So a lot of it was more or less understanding their processes, understanding what they wanted to do, understanding what they wanted to, what knobs they wanted to export, what knobs did they not want to export. Right? But if you take a look at this, we're seeing more and more that people are not talking about 3-year development efforts. It's really made the dynamic range of what we found with the SDK engagements for those types of environments is somewhere between 2 weeks to 3 months. And it depends on the complexity of what you're trying to do, and it also depends on whether or not you've established the process that you want to automate or not. Okay? So now we're going to drill down, and in fact, the marketing guy is going to start being quieter, and the engineering guy is going to start getting a little noisier. So what have we implemented using the virtual infrastructure data model? So if you take a look at VI really fits into two types of objects. Inventory objects that talk about physical things, if you can call a virtual machine a physical thing, but talks about host, data stores, etc., and then a service model, which are a set of services that you can apply to those physical entities.
Okay, so we'll spend a little time here on the virtual VI inventory, because really understanding the inventory is the key first step to being able to make effective use of the SDK. So really you'll see what looks like a fairly complicated diagram here on the left side. It's actually not so bad. First, I want to point out that, as the picture shows, it's the same inventory model for ESX and for Virtual Center. In Virtual Center, you make full use of this entire inventory hierarchy. In ESX, you end up with a somewhat more simplified model since you're only dealing with a single host. Really, if you look, there's the notion of the data center, which is really the base unit of stuff, and where stuff here is defined as things like networks and data stores, which are associated with data centers. It's also defined as hosts and VMs, which you see at the bottom of the tree here. The way to think about it is this path on the left from data center to folder to VM is really just your logical organization of the virtual machines in your data center. You can use folders to group them according to business unit, according to functionality, according to operating system, really whatever sort of organization you want to use. The path down the right side from the data center is more of the physical view of the objects in that data center. So you have a compute resource, which would either be a single host or a cluster of hosts in Virtual Center. This compute resource can then be subdivided into resource pools. Again, this is one of the fundamental VI3 concepts, is that you can aggregate resources into clusters and then subdivide them again into resource pools to distribute how they're managed, how much resources you can allocate to particular entities in the system. And there are a couple of bridges between these two paths. You know, you see that the virtual machine lives in a resource pool that's done for assigning resources to the virtual machine. They're not drawn on the graph. There's associations between virtual machines and your networks and data stores, obviously, because a virtual machine will live on some data store or data stores. It will use some network or networks. The interesting one, of course, is the link between VM and host. Historically, this has been really a solid line link as we've drawn it here. Really, in VI3, this is much more of a dotted line link. A VM is on a host at a particular point in time, but because you have vMotion, relocation, things like that, the mapping between a VM and a host is really temporary and can change over time, either based on explicit user actions or if you're using something like DRS or HA, just as part of the system taking care of your inventory. Again, that's the entire view. In ESX, you don't have to worry about a lot of this because you have one compute resource, which is your host. And so in the VI client, we show a simplified view of the inventory where we just start with the host as the root node. But underlying it from an API point of view, it's exactly the same. If you're using the API to access an ESX host, you'll see this entire inventory. It's just you'll have a singleton data center that has a singleton compute resource, and so on.
I think one of the benefits as well is that if you're using the API, going back to the VI client allows you to map what you're seeing programmatically to what you're actually seeing pictorially. The second part that goes on to it is we show one folder. You can actually, a lot of organizations will have multiple depths of folders where they will organize things based on business units or operating system classes or whatever. So you could actually have a very nested folder structure. But that kind of fits into it. It's always good to go back to the VI client and say, okay, what does that physically represent?
As Henry mentioned, in addition to the inventory, we also have a collection of services. And again, these are really just singleton objects for doing different pieces of functionality, alarms, getting diagnostics, looking at events that happen on various elements of the inventory, doing performance monitoring, doing current scheduled and historical tasks, and user roles and user management. And a lot of these various services correspond to locations in the NVI client. So you can see at the bottom, we show the recent tasks. This is provided by the task manager. There's an events tab, which is populated by calls to the event manager. The performance tab is populated using calls to the performance manager, and so forth. So again, all these services are available through the API and are reflected in the VI client. Yes?
I noticed there was no link between the host and the resource pool.
That's correct.
Is there a way to find out, so if I have a number of hosts and I that's my primordial resource pool in which I want to make stuff, is that primordial pool my compute resource?
Yes. So the way to think about it is there's two kinds of compute resources. There's basically a singleton compute resource that corresponds to a single host, and then that compute resource has a root resource pool that you can subdivide corresponding to the resources of that host. Or in Virtual Center, you can have a cluster, which is some set of hosts that you've decided to treat as a unified chunk of resources that you then divide up using the resource pool.
So you're using cluster in the generic term of a lot of hosts, not necessarily a high-performance cluster.
That's correct. Right, right. So really, it's just an aggregate of hosts. It's a pool of hosts that you can then divide up resources.
So that doesn't have anything to do with
them
having shared storage?
So not necessarily. The different hosts can have could have their own storage. Of course, in a cluster environment, that's fairly limiting because it's going to limit how much the motion you can do between hosts in the cluster. Okay. Any other questions before we move on? So can hosts be in resource pools? Not exactly. Again, the model is that a compute resource is a bunch of stuff that you divvy up into resource pools. If you have a single host, then the resource pools correspond to resource pools on that host. If a host is part of a cluster compute resource, you can create resource pools from that cluster, but you don't explicitly specify the mapping of where those resource pools map to individual hosts. So in some sense, the host has kind of given up its identity to the collective and then allowed Virtual Center to divvy up virtual machines and resources based on the resource pool hierarchy. Okay. For the next part of the talk, I'd like to talk about how you can use the VI APIs and SDK for doing performance management, since that's certainly an area of wide interest that we've seen. Again, the starting point for doing performance metrics is the Performance Manager object. This is a VI API service. It provides both real-time and historical metrics, and I'll go into a little bit more detail about that. These metrics are available on a variety of inventory objects, including virtual machines, hosts, resource pools, and clusters. The basic model that we use is that metrics are collected at some base granularity, and then are rolled up into historical intervals, and we preserve statistics on these base samples. So we'll be able to report both the latest sample as well as average min max of the samples that were rolled up into a coarser grained interval.
If you kind of compare that to, and this over here is what you'll see on an ESX server that is essentially continuously being monitored and you're collecting performance. And if you kind of go back to the SNMP days, in the SNMP days, you can almost always get what is the current performance at this point in time. Interesting, but not necessarily very valuable. Because if you sit back at any point in time, you kind of want to take a look at your load over your last hour, your last 24 hours, and take a look at it over a period of time. The probability that you're going to get the performance metric that you want to have at the time you need it is pretty low. So really the intent here that what we tried to do with ESX Server is to be able to give you both performance metrics and sufficient history so that you can answer questions very quickly that said, what is the best place for me to put a new virtual machine based on not only its performance at that point in time, but also the performance over a period of time of interest. So if you think about this, you may make some provisioning actions at 2 o'clock in the morning. The probability that performance you're going to get at that point in time is relevant is pretty low. What you really want to take a look at is what was it during peak at 3 p.m. if you happen to be in the business world, maybe at 7 p.m. if you happen to be in the entertainment world.
The question was, are these intervals and granularities configurable? And the answer is, in Virtual Center, yes, they are. For a standalone ESX host, we come with a preset interval and granularity that we provide that's not configurable right now.
Is that stored on the ESX server? Is it local storage?
The performance metrics? No, the data is stored in the virtual. So on ESX, for a standalone host, it's stored in the file system. In Virtual Center, the data is stored in the database.
Right. So in the case of ESX, what you're going to have is real-time samples for the last hour, which are 20-second samples that are kept for the last hour, and then 24-hour samples, one-day samples, which are stored at 5-minute intervals. So all of that is stored, always maintained, always warm for you to be able to recover.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is actually a point I wanted to make sure I emphasized. It is an average, but we also provide min and max. We got a lot of feedback from VC1, both around the SDK and around the UI, that taking these 5-minute samples was great, but you would lose some of the detail in, you know, little short-lived spikes in the aggregation into the average. So in the current version of the SDK, in addition to average, we also roll up mins and maxes, so you can see if during that interval there were any periods, any bursts of either high activity or low activity that you might want to be aware of.
Okay, there was a question back there.
Sorry? Question was, any shorter time period than 20 seconds? The answer is currently 20 seconds is what we're using as the base granularity. There's no guarantee that will be the base granularity, so as I'll discuss later, you can retrieve from the system what its base granularity is, and so you shouldn't hard code 20. And yes, we have heard feedback that folks want finer grain data than that. Of course, it's a trade-off between, you know, the cost of doing the monitoring versus the granularity of the data, so that's something that we're still exploring. Okay.
So now when you take a look at Performance Manager for Virtual Center, we're actually providing to you more information. It's aggregating the information. So now we keep track of 1 week samples, 1 month samples, 1 year samples, and if that's not enough, then the administrator can create their own custom sample intervals. So it gives you the ability of taking care of that, and for those of you who come from the acronym correct, I think it's MRTG or MTRG, but if you come from that world, then that follows exactly the types of intervals that go onto it. One of the things that you can do with the ESX server is, and of course the roll-ups are there, so from there you're going to get the min, the max, the average for all of those intervals. So the benefit again is if you're going to turn around and look at provisioning or capacity planning, you can take a look at a longer view and say, let me take a look at the utilization of an individual host, an individual resource over the last month, and then you're going to get that level of detail over the last month. One of the things that we found, however, is that the sites will decide how much data you want to keep in the database. So there is the ability for you to be able to have 4 levels of filtering by which you start removing counters in order to manage the data size that you have and also the performance of the environment. So one of the things you need to be somewhat careful about is if you are writing an API application and somebody else is managing Virtual Center for you, if they filtered out the metrics, when you're retrieving the metrics, you're only going to get whatever had not been filtered out. However, if you're trying to get real-time metrics, then those go back to the ESX box, you're going to have the full set of counters. So you kind of have to be very careful about what the Virtual Center administrator did with regards to performance as to what is available for you. Now, if you kind of compare the old way, right, the old way with VMware Command and VM Perl and VM Com, it was a really simple interface. You wanted a metric, you figured out what was called, and you just grabbed it. You know, not a lot of work, right? So if you want to take a look at CPU utilization, it's very simple, straightforward to do, and so forth. It was a simple interface. But the problem with the simple interface is when you start taking a look at all the counters that are available, all the performance metrics that you have available, and you say, you could not say, get me all of them. The other part, too, is there were point-in-time metrics. So all you could get was essentially the real-time performance of that metric at that point in time. You could not start getting aggregated metrics, rolled-up metrics, and so forth through the old interface. The problem was if VMware, in a new release, introduced new metrics, then you had to rewrite your application to say, okay, I want to get this new metric. So I had to discover it, get it, and take care of it. With the VI API way...
Make me say it's complex. So we tried to address some of the issues with the old way. It is slightly more complex to get started. You have to do an initial query to the server to get the list of metrics that are available, retrieve the metadata describing those metrics, and really just kind of bootstrap your side of things to know what you can query and what data is available, what granularities, and so forth. But once you do that, and that may require building up some data structures on the client side, you then get significant advantages over the old way. You can build a query that lets you retrieve multiple metrics in a single call, which is more efficient than having to get individual metrics, one metric at a time, and one VM at a time, one host at a time. You can retrieve multiple time periods. It stores the history for you on the back end. You don't have to keep pulling for data and then doing the differentials on your side, building up the history on your side. That data is provided for you from the back end. You can also, in a single call, retrieve information about multiple objects. For example, in a single call, you can say, I want to receive these metrics over this time interval for the host and all the virtual machines on the host, or for a cluster and all the virtual machines in the cluster. And so this is really around the idea that there's a little bit of upfront cost to set things up and set up your queries, but once you pay that upfront cost, you can very efficiently make calls to the server, retrieve large amounts of data, and really amortize the latency penalty of having to go over the network to retrieve this data. So conceptually, what we provide through the API is it's a whole mess of counters. They're identified with an integer counter ID, and we provide metadata that maps from these counter IDs to information about the counter. For example, counter 1 is a CPU metric. It's about CPU usage. The unit is percentage, and it's a rate stat. You know, it might be you could have a rate. You could have an absolute counter. You could have a delta, which tells you just the amount of change since the previous sample. And all this metadata is provided by the performance manager. You can retrieve it to the client and see what metrics are available on the ESX server, virtual center server that you're talking to.
One note is don't fall in love with one is CPU usage percent, right? What we essentially have is a mapping table, and of course they may change. They're not persistent, so the mapping between the counter number and this definition is not persistent. So one of the things you want to do is grab the metadata at the start of your session. It's good for the set of your session, but you don't really want to compile in one equals that. Don't do that. You really need to go back to the server and take care of it because they'll bounce around.
Right. So now really we're just going to talk through the steps that are involved in building a query. I want to retrieve some set of performance metrics from the server. Well, first you have to decide what the entity is that you're interested in. As I mentioned earlier, you can look at hosts, virtual machines, compute resources, or resource pools. And you can either specify a particular entity of one of these types or the entity and its children. So, again, the example would be a resource pool and all the virtual machines in the pool. And you'll notice that not all metrics are available for all entities. Virtual machines, you can see in this case, a lot of these are all available. For a host, some of them don't necessarily make sense. And then for a compute resource or a resource pool, it might even be a smaller subset of common metrics that make sense across a compute resource or across a resource pool.
In the future, we may add new entities, and so you'll continue to have the standard counters, and they may apply to new entities as you move on from there.
Right. Once you choose the entity that you're interested in accessing data for, you have to specify which counters you're interested in. This is pretty much a free choice. You get the whole list of counters. You just get to pick the ones you want, one or more. In this case, we've chosen a few here. They don't need to be contiguous. That just made Henry's artwork easier. So the next thing you specify is the interval. And as we mentioned, there's a little bit of a dichotomy here. You can either get real-time statistics or historical statistics. So you can either choose the real-time stats or specify one of the predefined historical intervals provided by the server, where predefined, again, means the ones that come out of the box or any custom ones that have been added on that server. In this case, we've picked 1 week. And now, really, the last part that we get to at the bottom is just choosing the time window you're interested in. And for historical stats, you would just specify a begin time and an end time and say, I want all the stats in that time interval. For real-time stats, you would specify a count. I want real-time stats. I want the last 10, for example. So really, now that we've gone through these steps, what we've done is built a query. The entity, the list of counters, the interval, and the samples. And now we just take that query and ship it off to the performance manager, and it'll come back with a probably big honking table of data. And this big honking is a technical term, and it can either be in CSV, comma separated values format, or in structured, so XML format. In general, if you're doing historical queries, you pretty much always want to be using CSV format. If you're doing a real-time query where you're just retrieving the last sample, the structured format is probably fine, but for any sort of historical queries, definitely the CSV is more efficient. But anyway, so basically what you get back is these are the counters, these are the entities, and then these are the time samples that you ask for corresponding to either the number of samples or the historical interval that you chose. And at this point, basically, it's lather, rinse, repeat. You can reuse that query. You may need to, if for a real-time query, you might just use the exact same query. Every 20 seconds, give me the last sample. For historical query, someone might choose using the UI, okay, now I'm interested in this time interval, or I want to drill down to this level of detail, and so you'll have to tweak the historical interval or the time period, what have you, but you've already built up the list of counters and the entities that you're interested in. But that's basically the process of the retrieving the performance metrics from the server.
So the benefit is if we'd ever go back to the web self-service portal, you could actually take a look and say, I'll give you what the current VM status is. I'll now give you the ability of being able to have control over power operations. You could actually add now a third column that turns around and says, what's the average CPU utilization over a period of time, let's say 1 hour or 1 day, so that somebody can take a look and say, okay, now I'm getting some performance metrics to it. Because Virtual Center or the ESX server maintains continuous history and continuous samples, that means you don't have to write a complex application, an agent that sits there and is querying the real-time parameters and setting up min, max, and averages that go onto it. At any point in time, you can simply figure out for the time period that you're interested, get the information, and populate your application with the metric of interest. Okay? Yes?
I've got a relatively mature business management process kind of based on that IQ. You wouldn't use this to replace that, correct? Is this kind of like Perfmon and these sort of things? Kind of.
Yeah, and what you're going to find is more and more of those higher-level applications and so forth will use the information that's coming from VMware in order to populate and aggregate the information and go on to it. And you'll see a lot of the partners are actually using this interface and aggregating. The benefit is, by the way, is that all of a sudden you get the same number, right? You always have the problem, which is tool A tells you X and tool Y tells you Z, and the user's telling you some other number. The benefit that we have by using the API and using the SDK is, and our integration with various partners turns around, and for you, your life is much easier, which is if the number is 10, the number is 10 wherever you're looking at. So one of the benefits that we have with the ability of being able to aggregate and deliver information through the same interface is that your life gets slightly easier. I'm sure there are other ways in which your life gets complicated, but that's the different session. Yes, sir.
Do I lose any of the metrics if I don't VMware tools installed?
The question was, do you lose any of the metrics if you don't have VMware tools installed? The answer is, I believe that all the metrics we return right now are not driven by information from the guest, and so these are all available whether you run the tools in the guest or not. Going forward, we might choose to integrate guest-centric metrics into this, in which case you would have to have the tools running to get those specific metrics. That's not true of any of the metrics we report right now, though. Yeah. The question was, is this information gathered from the slash proc directory? No, and in fact, the proc nodes are basically, which were originally intended as just developer debugging tools, ended up getting much broader use than that. those are in most cases either deprecated or removed. The information is coming from the same raw data source, which is the hypervisor layer. We were able to make calls into the hypervisor to retrieve the metrics from that level and then do the aggregation at a slightly higher level and then report it out through the virtual center and then through the APIs.
Good question.
The question was, is the data stored on the host before Virtual Center picks it up? Yes, the data is stored on the host for the past day, whether Virtual Center is listening for it or not. And so, for example, if Virtual Center goes away for a couple hours and then comes back, it won't lose any of the history. It'll be able to pick it all up from the host.
But it's not in proc nodes?
It's not in proc nodes, no. But it is stored on the host. Okay. Yes?
Great segue. Great segue. Give us 4 minutes and then we'll answer your question. Or maybe 10. Right?
I'll pay you later.
So if you take a look at this, one of the things that we've begun to introduce is the VI Perl Toolkit. And the VI Perl Toolkit is a language adaptation of Perl, or a language adaptation of the API in Perl. What does it do? If you remember, we had the web service, and now the toolkit encompasses a runtime, a set of functions, and then a set of scripts. So the intent there is that you provide all of the information that's much easier for you to use the API. Where we are at today is it's in alpha form. We've decided to release it first through SourceForge, so it's available as an open source module, and we'll talk about the delivery mechanisms through VMware in a few minutes. So, VI Perl Toolkit really quickly, and this is pretty well all the functions are available. First of all, you have to log in, of course, and log out. All of the performance metrics requires you to have a session with the web service. So unlike SNMP where you can do things using public or whatever it is, you really have to authenticate yourself. So you use a login, logout. The other part, too, is the first thing you need to do is navigate to the objects that are important to you. So there's fine entity views. So all you simply do is you specify what type of object you're interested in. If you remember the object model, if you want to take a look at virtual machines, you simply say, okay, I'm looking for virtual machines. You can provide a filter, which is essentially a name value pair. So the example is you can say, find me all virtual machines that are powered on, or find me all virtual machines that are running Windows 2003. So you simply identify the entity that you're interested in. And then also you can get the view through a manage object reference, which is essentially you'll find as you go through the structure at any point in time, it's essentially a way to uniquely identify an object. Okay? Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
It does not have to be root, right?
We usually use root.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but you're a developer.
No, I think you would authenticate with whatever credentials you had on the box. So if you're using a standalone ESX host and you have users on that host that have permission to do certain things, you would authenticate as that user and you could do whatever that user permitted to do.
Would it mean you root that back?
No. Assuming you've granted permission to non-root users to do those things, you'd be fine.
Yeah. Remember, he's a developer, which means the only way in which he ever logs in is as root.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I wish I had seen this slide before you presented, because actually secret actually is our root password at VMware, so we probably should have scrubbed that.
Yes, sir.
The question was, do you have granular permissions on ESX as well as in Virtual Center? And the answer is yes. Yeah.
Are there any plans to do a different certificate-based
authentication? So either don't have the prompt for a password, or do a no-no and set the story password on that. The question was, are there any plans to do certificate-based authentication? The answer is, we don't have that now. It is something that we're looking at, yes.
Good, thank you. Okay, that's why I'm in marketing.
Yeah.
So 3 minutes after I answer his question, I'll answer yours. Okay. So here's an example, right? Maybe there are errors in there. Okay, so here's an example of how would you use the toolkit in order to, for example, snapshot all running virtual machines. Where are we in time? Oh, I don't know. We only have 12 minutes left. Do you think we can do it in that time? Okay, so the first thing you need to do is log in, right? In this case, we changed the password to PWD. The second thing you do is you simply get all the virtual machines that are powered on. So in this case here, all your selection parameter is get me every virtual machine whose run state is powered on. The filter can be as complex as you want to. It essentially ends in all the conditions that you're providing. And then in this case here, what we're doing is creating a snapshot for each one of the virtual machines that came back. All you need to do is provide this, you know, standard snapshot parameters. The standard interface, by the way, for VI Perl Toolkit is a synchronous interface. So in this case here, you'd snapshot virtual machine 1, it would complete, and then you'd go on to virtual machine 2. You can provide, there is the ability for you to create a task, a little bit more complex, but that would start the snapshot task, and then you'd have to monitor it until it's completed. It gives you that flexibility to decide whether or not I'm trying to do a quick and dirty interface or whether or not I want to have a little, slightly more complex interface. All you'd essentially have to do is monitor tasks. Yes?
If you do a task for the job in Virtual Center, you have a task?
That's correct, right? Because everything's orchestrated through the same mechanism. So that's a good example of how, in fact, you can then monitor and manage it from that side. Yes, ma'am? There are sample scripts today in SourceForge. I think there are like 12. You can't run your data center on all the sample scripts, but it's a good example. Somebody's asked me that, but it's a good example for you to be able to, we want to teach you how to fish, then you decide which type of fish you'd like.
And hey, this is open source. You know, download the toolkit, write some scripts, submit them back. We'll include them so others can benefit from your experiences.
Yes, sir.
First, I just want to say thanks. Second question, leading into this, the less positive is there going to be any attempt in the future to try to get it out a little closer to the release? It's actually delayed me being able to go to VI3 because I've got a homegrown disaster recovery backup solution built using the SDK and Perl, and I looked at trying to build it myself, and luckily I gave up because this is going to make it
okay.
Trivial.
Okay.
Yeah, for the first part, thank you. For the second part, Henry.
Yeah, so, no, in fact, I think one of the things that we've really learned, I think the two parts. The first part was taking a look at the SDK and so forth, the migration from, I'll call it the organic VM Perl, VMware command, into a more fully supported environment. And so really what we've taken a look at is it was important for us to provide something based on the web services interface. It was important for us to provide language type bindings. Yes, we know we're late. And really, a lot of cases from the reaction we've gotten through VMworld, there's a lot of cases of trying to provide additional priority on these types of environments.
Yeah, and I'll also add that just once we create this path, it won't lag going forward because this is integrated with the web service so that as we make changes to the API, they will automatically flow through into the toolkits.
Yeah.
Right.
Now,
slight follow up to that. One thing that concerned me was when you released it on SourceForge, is it going to be officially supported?
Yep. Hold that thought. Okay. Yep. Now we'll go through that. Yep. Any other questions before we move off the slide? Okay. Please. Okay. So if you take a look at the VI Perl Toolkit versus VM Perl. One is it's full access to the API functionality. In the other environment, you could do things, for example, you could do a snapshot, but you couldn't do a clone, you couldn't do a create. Everything that's available in the VI client is available through the toolkit. The second benefit is it can connect with virtual. Thank you. Fine. I got it. Oh, cool. Okay. I have seven, but that's okay. Okay, so connect to a virtual center and ESX server. It can interface to all of the resources. So really what we try to do is everything that you can do, go onto it. Full control of virtual machine lifecycle and access to the full performance metrics. Okay. So what is the development process? Why did we decide to go through SourceForge? Right? We decided to go through SourceForge for multiple reasons. The first one is early access to technology. Through going through SourceForge, it meant that we could provide you access without having to go through, you know, the formal beta cycle, which we will, but it gave you that earlier access to partners. The second part is very much what we really want to have is community involvement, right? Most of us don't run data centers. Most of us don't have to write scripts, right? We do it as works of fiction. You guys do it with works of reality. The goal that we're trying to do is, guys, you don't know how to do a snapshot VM. Here's what you need to do and everything else. Really what we're hoping is that the community, in fact, puts in new scripts. People actually enhance the runtime and everything else, and it really builds from that. So that's the first part, which is working through that. For commercial vendors, what we've decided to use is CDDL, right? CDDL is a license that's very balanced, right? You can copy the, you can use the source with your commercial product, and it's not like GPL where all of a sudden you have to give your first child, your second child, and your third child if you happen to use it, right? CDDL allows you to use it. It says if you make changes to that specific source module, you should make that source available. That's the intent there. It's a very even-handed license. Okay? So what's the next step? The next step is we're going to go through a beta. Roughly, we're going to go through a beta end of this year, beginning of next year is roughly what the beta cycle is. So we're going to go through a formal beta where we'll scrape what currently exists when SourceForge, scrape is another technical term, that will take that, run it through a standard beta cycle within VMware. And finally, we're going to release it. So it'll be a fully supported release product. By the way, if you notice, the arrow says that we're going to take that and push it back into the SourceForge open source model. Right? Our goal is to continue to use the open source community for getting new scripts, getting new value, and everything else through that. And so simply, it depends on where you want to be. For those of you very conservative, you may wait until VMware releases it. Right? Or that's when you move it to production. Those of you a little less conservative may turn around and say, I like this open source model. It's a good way to take care of it. But really, our guarantee is that we will provide from that a standard release mechanism from there. Okay? Before she comes back and beats me up. So if you take a look at the summary, right? It's VI API is a powerful tool, whether you use the classic API that's essentially a web services direct interface or using the toolkit, that's a powerful tool. The important thing is a single access point. That observation was dead on, which is the fact that if I create a task in the API, I can monitor it through VI client. There's a good example of that, right? We think it meets all the requirements for completeness, security, and performance, and it's designed around standards. Where are we going with this? Well, the first thing is, again, we talked about VI Pro Toolkit. Our goal is to release it. We are looking at other toolkits. We'd surely like to get feedback. Right now, we know we're going to be releasing a C++ toolkit. We're looking at the .NET environment and understanding. We're trying to understand whether C# will fit into it or whether we need to do a VB or a VB script. It'd be good to have an understanding of that. Really, what we're trying to do is continue to enhance the API so that as we provide new functionality, it will reflect into the API and automatically reflect into other toolkits. Scalability and performance, you can never have enough performance, and scale availability is very important. So really, a lot of the areas are trying to improve. And then incorporate standards as they become more available, commercially available. So what I'd like to do before you guys all disappear is, I'd surely like to have go through various toolkits that we're interested in. I'd like to have a show of hands about interest. So Perl Toolkit, how many of you are interested in the Perl Toolkit? Crack, that's what it is.
Crack.
Okay. How about .NET? Okay, so specifically C#. Okay. VB? Okay, so now, who of you care, if it's .NET, I don't care which, if it's VB or C Sharp. Yeah. If anybody says, hey, I want to have .NET, I don't care if it comes out in C Sharp or VB. I get nods about hands, because Daniel's counting, right? Yeah, okay. Java. Okay. PHP. Okay. Python. What language did I forget?
Ruby.
Okay.
Fortran.
Okay. Just a couple of more resources. If you haven't discovered yet the Manage Object Browser, this is a good way. I like to call it the Google for objects. Google version 1, maybe. It really is. It's available on every ESX server and every virtual center. You simply go in, manage object browser, and you can trace through the tree. It's a good tool to go onto it. The second thing is we move the reference guide so everything is online. So if you take a look at the objects, you go through it. We have a community forum, and in fact, in the next couple weeks, we're going to start segmenting the community forums into specific APIs. We found roughly that 10 to 15% of the conversations, about 2 or 3 conversations into a thread, somebody says, hey, I wasn't talking about this API, I was talking about that API. So really, it'll be much clearer as to which ones you're going into. The Perl Toolkit is available through SourceForge. The last thing, by the way, and if you want to send me your email address or just give it to me, we are doing some webinars. We did a webinar that went into more detail on the VI Perl Toolkit. It is recorded so you can replay it, you know, in your own home, on your home entertainment center, and learn about the VI Perl Toolkit. Next week, we're going to have more, an in-depth one on performance management, and that will actually go through sample scripts that you can deal with it. And then in addition to that, we're going to be doing one in December on the object model. And I'm taking any suggestions as to what other webinars there are. They're intended to be 1 hour in duration, can be replayed. We're going to use SourceForge to provide sample scripts as well. Yeah, we're going to communicate it through the forum. So the forum will do it as well. Okay, thank you very much for your time. And of course, your survey. Right, thank you.